And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to this episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Matt Fortuna. Special guest today, Aaron Suttles, Alabama beat writer for The Athletic. Pretty good, comprehensive, deep dive into the Crimson Tide program. Good, bad, and indifferent. Obviously, a lot of good, not much bad. Mild amount of indifferent. But Matt, I guess as we sort of warn around the possibility of Notre Dame and Alabama, and you know, could there be an upset? Could there not? Now that I'm back at my house and no longer in the South Bend Regional Airport's business center, I can't say that I've really changed my opinion from the first one, that this feels like a hell of a mountain for Notre Dame to climb on January 1.
I think that's a fair opinion. It's an accurate opinion. I would say I understand it. So, again, I don't say this to criticize, but I've just never seen a team in the seven-year playoff era where, and again, they're the only team to ever get in coming off a loss, but I've just never seen a team, a fan base, everyone just so down and dejected. Like, what are we even doing this for? And I know the people in the locker room probably don't think that way. They better not think that way. But there's just so little hype and momentum around this game right now for a game with national championship implications that I just scratch my head a little bit. I mean, I just can't. I mean, maybe Oklahoma last year as they went into play, that really good LSU team, and we saw what happened. But the lack of excitement is just – it scares me a little. I don't know. I mean, it wasn't anywhere near this level last year going into the Georgia game, but there was a sense of like, oh God, what Notre Dame get itself into going into Athens in the middle of regular season. You know, when, you know, they haven't looked that good so far, blah, blah, blah. Louisville ran the ball on them. And last I checked, they had the ball in Georgia territory with a chance to win the game on the last drive. Is that Georgia team, this Alabama team? No, but I just think we, all of us, need to loosen up a little, have some Baileys during Christmas, come back on the other end of the holiday, and get ready for this game, because I thought this whole moment would be a lot more exciting. If you told me at the beginning of the year we're talking about a playoff matchup ahead of Christmas with Notre Dame and Alabama, sign me and most people up. And right now, just the level of doom and gloom is too much even for me. And I can be down on my luck sometimes as well when it comes to this team. But let's get some energy here.
It is strange. Like, I've got a mailbag up today where, I mean, I think there was like 170 responses in the mailbag call out. And probably a third of them were sort of some version of like, why is Notre Dame playing the game? Would Notre Dame be better off sort of going to the Orange Bowl and not playing for a national championship?
Yeah, lose to A&M. That'll do you well. Yeah,
but have a chance at a major bowl win. And look, the point I tried to make in the mailbag, and I may have said it on Sunday in our podcast, I'll say it again now, is like Notre Dame is one of five teams to make the playoff more than once. This might be old hat for Alabama and Clemson, but this is like sacred land for everybody else in college football, Georgia included, Matt Fortuna's favorite college football program. Making it once is a huge, huge deal. Like, ask Jim Harbaugh how his life would be different if he had made the playoff twice or once. So just getting there is, it's one, it's a huge recruiting tool. That there's a big part of the reason why the same teams keep getting the same five-star players, because they make the playoff semi-regularly. You know, that would give you some hope that maybe Notre Dame can be a little bit more like Georgia, a little bit more like Ohio State, a little bit more like Clemson in terms of the five stars that they have on their roster. But my other part was just like, I would like Notre Dame to have a very clear and sober view of where it stands compared to the rest of the teams playing for the college football national championship. Because if you don't play these teams, then I think you can sort of talk yourself into being a little bit better or a little bit more comfortable than you actually are. And that doesn't even get to like the possibility that Notre Dame wins the game. I realize that that's hard for people to get their head around, but I mean, I'm going to have to spend some time digging through the Notre Dame annals here to figure out, like, if Notre Dame upset Alabama in the college football playoff, where that would rank among all-time great Notre Dame wins. I think that it would have to go above and beyond. I mean, are we going back to Ara Parseghian? Are we going before that? It's hard to say anything is, like, the best ever at Notre Dame because there's been a lot of best evers over the last nearly 130 years, but certainly this would have to be the most shocking upset by a good Notre Dame team if they won.
Yeah, I mean, have they ever won a game as a 19-point favorite?
I mean, this is like, forget Catholics versus convicts and game of the century and all that kind of stuff. I mean, this is way above and beyond that.
You know, the Jets just beat the Rams a 17-point underdog, so they cost themselves Trevor Lawrence, and maybe Notre Dame can earn themselves a rematch with Trevor Lawrence beating Bama.
The 19.5-point spread, it was interesting sort of looking at Notre Dame spreads this year. It would be the equivalent of Duke or Georgia Tech beating Notre Dame. And, like, how would we feel if that happened? Like, think of the questions we would get from readers or on Twitter if that had occurred. Like, and just how absurd the notion of Duke or Georgia Tech beating Notre Dame actually is.
That's where the point spread is. I get it. I just don't. Notre Dame's closer to Alabama than Duke and Georgia Tech are to Notre Dame, is what I'm saying.
I believe that too. I'm just saying the point spread is the point spread.
But I think upsets in season happen. Upsets in the playoff of this magnitude, like, you're getting everyone's A game. For the most part.
The biggest upset.
It's not a trap game.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a little bit with Aaron, but, you know, Ohio State beating Alabama in 2014, that's the biggest upset and remains the biggest upset in college football playoff history. I think it's 7.5 points.
Well, no one knew who Cardale Jones was. He was a third-string quarterback with one star under his name. Does Notre Dame even have a third-string quarterback right now?
Yeah.
And Ezekiel Elliott was not even an All Big Ten player, and went
who
and had
is from St. Louis, much like
Kyron Williams. Oh, there you are. And they both wear crop tops, which yes. used to be banned. Ah. There we go. We fixed the playoff. We fixed their name. Speaking of fashion, do we know what we're calling this game? And I asked this because I was trying to get someone in my family who's a fan some merchandise for Christmas, as I do anytime Notre Dame's big year. And because there's no Rose Bowl insignia on this, and there's no Cotton Bowl insignia on this, all there is an Under Armour hat that says playoff. Like, you can't buy Notre Dame playoff gear right now because you don't know what the name of the game is.
You know what? When I get that down there, I'll find out, because I remember them selling merch of the Cotton Bowl in 2018 at the Media Hotel. So when I'm
But it was called the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, they got to have something. Gotta have something. I don't know. I think I'm just sort of sticking
Catholics versus Crimson. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're gonna have to workshop that one.
I don't want to say what people were saying in 2012 because that backfired pretty bad. Listening to you describe, like, Notre Dame looking in the mirror and seeing where they are. One, I don't know if you watch the NBA, but that sounded just like Steve Kerr last night, who said, "Oh, we get to play the Nets and Bucks in our first two games of the year, so we'll know how bad we are and how far we have to go through our first two games." Don't know if there's a like-for-like analogy there, but it reminded me of that. But it does remind me of 2016, which, again, losing season 4-8 almost cost everyone their jobs, but was one of those scenarios. And Notre Dame's not unique to this. You saw it with Northwestern last year when they went 3-9 and made some changes and came back to make the Big Ten title game. You know, sometimes you need to get punched in the mouth on a big stage like that to expose all of your shortcomings, because if you're driving a car that's low on gas forever, yeah, it's gotten you this far, but, you know, it's not predictive of where you're going to go. And Notre Dame running his program, which, look, I don't want to criticize it. They're in the playoff for the second time in 3 years. They're a pretty damn good program.
43-7.
Their goal is to win a national championship. And, you know, based on what we saw last Saturday, based on what the odds makers think about 8-9 days from now, they're still pretty far away. Does my perception of that change if Ohio State gets shut out by Clemson again the way they did a few years ago in the playoff? I don't know. It's been a really weird year for Ohio State. I've a hard time drawing grand conclusions, good or bad, about that program based on everything that's happened this year in the Big Ten. But, there's nowhere to hide, for lack of a better term. Like, this is the standard. You're going to have to beat it eventually. It might not be pretty this time, but, like, this is what it takes. And, you know, Nick Saban is the guy you got to watch out for. And, you know, I don't know what else to say beyond that, because we're trying to, you know, thread the needle of positivity coming out of this game. And I don't know, I know I said the Clemson 10.5-point spread was disrespectful. I think 19 is very disrespectful, even if it kind of makes sense. But this is an Alabama team that just won its last game by 6 points. I mean, they're not – you'll hear Aaron Suttles later talk about their defensive liabilities. Notre Dame in some ways is built to take advantage of that. Does that mean they're going to throw for 400 yards? No, but until last week, they ran the ball pretty damn well. They have a really good offensive line. They have a really smart quarterback who can make plays on the run. We'll see.
At a minimum, it's going to be a fascinating test case for where Notre Dame is, because we already know where Alabama is. And to get more into that, we brought in Aaron Suttles from The Athletic. Let's get to that interview. Pretty good deep dive into the Crimson Tide and sort of where they are, how they got there, and what might be coming on January 1.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Pleased to bring into the Shamrock special guest, Alabama beat writer for The Athletic, Aaron Suttles. Aaron, thanks for joining the show to spread some holiday cheer for Notre Dame fans who are trying to figure out how Notre Dame is going to win this game. I guess just first off, you know, I asked Brian Kelly about this on Sunday during his conference call, because I think it is a sort of fascinating story within the game itself. Is Notre Dame has spent pretty much the last 8 years trying to get to where Alabama was in 2012, only to have Alabama sort of pull the rug out from under them and being like, haha, we will evolve further. So explain to people who just sort of follow Alabama casually how this program has gone from sort of like this monster machine from 2012 to now a pyrotechnic, light everyone on fire, but also still the monster machine that it was, just like a better version of that.
I think you can blame Gus Malzahn at Auburn. I think you can blame Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M. I think those, when those guys came into the league, Nick Saban said, hold up. And that's, you know, his infamous, is this what we want football to be statement. He sort of realized the game is changing. The rules sort of favor them with allowing the offensive line about, you know, 2.5 yards downfield before they call a penalty. We're going to have to do something about this. And then he brought in Lane Kiffin in 2014. And really that was the start of sort of Alabama hitting the next level – with this offense. Now, it's blended since then, but what they did in 14 with Lane Kiffin allowed them to go get really good quarterbacks, which Alabama has had some quote-unquote good quarterbacks, but they're always labeled game managers, right? A.J. McCarron, Greg McElroy, all those guys. Then they went and got good quarterbacks, and then they really were, I think, where they've really taken it to the next level is they go out and get more than one great wide receiver in a class. I mean, you bring in one class, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, and Devontae Smith, that's going to be three first-round NFL draft picks in one in receiving class. And then the next year you got Jalen Waddle. Previous to that, you got Amari Cooper. You had Calvin Ridley. So I think once Alabama became a destination for quarterbacks and receivers, that's when that offense really, as you had said, kind of eloquently stated, went into the next realm.
In that same vein, on the subject of quarterbacks, look, no one's going to call a Mac Jones a game manager. His numbers are
don't
incredible.
Do it. They'll get mad at you, Matt.
I'm not doing it. But you said elite, and like he wasn't your traditional five-star recruit. He wasn't a can't miss Tua Tagovailoa prospect. No one really knew what, at least outside Tuscaloosa, knew what Alabama had in him based on the small sample size last year. I don't think any of us saw this coming. How good is he?
It's a really tough question to answer because he showed me last year at Auburn in a loss and then playing a decent Michigan defense that he was more than just a game. Listen, there's this negative stereotype with game manager, which is ridiculous. What do you want your quarterback to do? You want him to manage the game. But the way he played in those showed me, okay, you can – sometimes Alabama has won in spite of its quarterback, right? I think, you know, no offense, a good guy, but Jake Coker kind of comes to mind. But they can win with Mac and because of Mac. And Mac's skills that get overlooked, he really is really good within the pocket. Whereas you look at a guy like Jalen Hurts, the first sign of pressure, he's looking to exit the pocket. Mac works within the pocket. He climbs the pocket. He can make a subtle step left, right. Sometimes he waits too long and leaves his offensive line a little exposed. He gets sacked, but that's where he's really good. He's on time with the football. He gets through his reads really well, and he's fairly accurate. I mean, he's not Tua Tagovailoa accurate, but he's accurate enough, and he throws a really good deep ball. So wherein I thought he would be good enough this year, I didn't think he'd be this good. But having said that, it's tough to gauge how good he is because if you took Ian Book and put him behind that Alabama's offensive line with those running backs, with those wide receivers, Ian Book looks like a different guy. So, I mean, Mac is good within his own right, but he's also operating with maybe the Joe Moore award-winning offensive line, maybe the Biletnikoff award winner, maybe the Heisman Trophy winner, maybe the Doak Walker winner. So he's got a lot of talent around him.
All right, so we do this straw poll on The Athletic for people who are not familiar with it, and I'm curious like how you rank the Alabama players, Jones, Harris, Smith, in that realm. Like who is Alabama's best offensive player?
Skill wise, are we throwing offensive linemen in?
Let's just skip the offensive linemen. Yeah. That's going to make people nauseous.
We've talked enough about that on this podcast.
Listen, I don't know how Notre Dame fans cannot love offensive line talk. They've got the most dominant offensive lineman in the game in the NFL right now, in Quentin, who I would watch all day, just highlights of him mashing dudes. But I would go Devontae Smith 1, Najee Harris 2. Even though he's hurt, there's a chance he might come back some point in the playoffs. Who knows? Jalen Waddle would be 3, and then Mac Jones would be 4.
You didn't mention his name because we didn't mention offense lineman, but Landon Dickerson, who probably won't play in the playoff. How big of a loss is that? I mean, this guy is – I feel like I've heard that name so long, and I'm like, you know what? He actually played on a winning Florida State team. That's how old he is. Like, he's been around for a generation. And, I mean, you saw the teammates on the field when he got carted off. I mean, you rarely see that kind of, like, one-on-one support from all 85 guys. I mean, what are they missing with him? And do you expect things to look significantly different up front without him snapping the ball?
Huge loss. Huge, huge, huge loss on the field. And as talented as Alabama is across the board offensively, he is the heart and soul of that offense. I'm talking he is the – that's why that reaction – I mean, it's not like they got together and said, hey, let's go out to the court. It was very spontaneous that everybody left the sideline and went and did that. I don't think you can replace him. As tough as he plays, is as emotional as he plays. He sort of sets the tone, and Chris Owens is a very talented guy, and he'll come in and he'll play center, but he's not going to give them what Landon Dickerson did, and that's a tough loss because that's the center, that's the position that makes it go, and to lose him in the fourth quarter like that was devastating for Alabama. Nick Saban has said, you know, I've talked to some people around, they call him a force multiplier. Like, he just makes everybody that much better. And he brings that edge to him, and they just don't have that without him. So that's something that I would expect Notre Dame to try to take advantage of.
Alabama's season, I think, was kind of interesting for people who just sort of casually observed it from a distance. I mean, the Ole Miss game got a lot of publicity because it was just like all over the place, high scoring. You had the Lane Kiffin factor. And then I don't know how many Notre Dame fans watched Alabama until they watched Saturday night against Florida as they were sort of drowning their sorrows after the Clemson game. And so I think you would come away thinking that like Alabama's defense is maybe somewhat vulnerable-ish. But I mean, you sort of pull back and look through their box scores, and I mean, it's the Kentucky game. They're just rolling over people. So is this defense sort of just like as you were with Alabama? I mean, I don't know if there's been an evolution on that side of the ball as well, but how do you see that group?
I think they've taken some steps back, particularly since Jeremy Pruitt left for Tennessee. I just think it's not the same group. I think they've done a better job at stopping the run this year. They were really bad at stopping the run by their standards last year. I think they've improved there. And they've improved this season. But I always, when people were getting really excited about how well Alabama's defense was playing, I would always caution, yeah, but there's always context to stuff, right? Numbers are just numbers until you provide context for them. They were playing the 11th, 12th, and 13th ranked offenses in the SEC. So they're playing Kentucky, Mississippi State. And those offenses weren't very good this year. So Alabama, I mean, they shut out Kentucky. That's great, but what does it really mean? I think they've gotten much better in the pass rush. I pulled a stat yesterday that blew my mind. Will Anderson's a guy that plays jack linebacker that Notre Dame's going to see a lot of because I think he leads the nation in quarterback pressures. But he didn't get his first sack until the eighth game of the season. He now leads the SEC in sacks. In four games, he got seven sacks. So he's really starting to turn it on. I think Christopher Allen's starting to play well, pass rush. But the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, I think the strength of this team is probably in the secondary. But as you saw, Florida really had no problem with it. I think they're vulnerable to accurate quarterbacks and mismatch players. And whether that be big-bodied players who are also athletic like Kyle Pitts or just big-bodied guys or just really fast guys, I think they can be – I think you can scheme your way with this Alabama defense to some cheap yards, some easy yards. But they have gotten better. It's just they're just not the same unit they were that people think about when they think of a Nick Saban defense.
In that same vein, I mean, what is the path to a Notre Dame? I don't even want to say victory because let's face it, like Alabama has better players. Notre Dame coaches could not sleep between now and then, come up with the best game plan ever, and it might not matter. But what is the path to Notre Dame victory? What does Alabama have to fall short in or do that they've done in some of their weaker performances this season to allow Notre Dame a chance to win this game?
Oh, I think, one, the defense has got to be really good. And because I think Alabama, they're just so efficient on offense that they don't waste many drives. And so, you can't help them. If you have a chance to get off the field on third down, your third down defense has to be really good. If Notre Dame can do that, with the way they play on offense, they are able to shorten games. I think that's the best opportunity, but you're still going to have to score a lot of points. So I think one third down defense is really key and clutch. Getting some turnovers wherever you can, and then just controlling the style of game that it is, controlling the clock, controlling the way that you want to play, that gives Notre Dame, I think, the best chance to win.
I'm curious about the controlling the clock because that was something that Brian Kelly mentioned a little bit on Sunday, is essentially conceding that ball control was going to have to sort of be part of Notre Dame's offensive game plan. And, I mean, they can do that with a really good line, multiple tight ends. So I was kind of interested, like, has Alabama played a team that runs a lot of 12 personnel, 13 personnel. Like, I don't know if that's a style of play in the SEC in 2020.
Now, imagine saying that 20 years ago.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's like
It's just a complete role reversal, because I heard, you know, when the matchups got announced this weekend, Nick Saban saying, you know, the way they play, they got a lot of big tight ends they're going to throw at you. We don't play a lot of teams like that anymore. And I'm just thinking, like, he's right. There's just Georgia's really not that. They were the closest thing, but even now they're embracing, you know, quarterback and throwing it around a lot. There's just not that team in the SEC that's going to test you. I mean, there used to be. It was every year guaranteed. You're going to get that from LSU every year. Now LSU's not that. So Alabama hadn't really played against a lot of those teams. So I do think there's an opportunity to kind of catch Alabama off guard, just the physicality, just because, I mean, Alabama didn't have any 250-pound linebackers anymore like they did when these two teams played in 2012. It's just they've gotten lighter in the middle because they've had those middle linebackers have to pay, you know, cover really good tight ends and running backs out of the backfield and sometimes slot receivers. So they've shrunk sort of who they are in the middle of the defense. And I think there's an opportunity, which is why I mentioned one of the things Alabama doesn't do as well as it used to is it doesn't stop the run. With Notre Dame's offensive line, if they're able to control that pace, they shorten that game. I still think that's an opportunity for them to make this a game.
How instrumental really has Steve Sarkisian been? I know we've heard his name touted a lot. I'm personally a little surprised he hasn't gotten further down the line with interviews for head coaching jobs elsewhere. Maybe he's just waiting for Nick Saban to retire. I don't know. But it does seem like, much like Bill Belichick in the NFL, you work for Nick Saban, and that's, you know, your gold star stamp of approval, and you could have any job you want. Is he as changed as the narrative out there says he is? And how much of this success of this new and improved Alabama offense is him pushing the right buttons and not just having three different Heisman candidates catching, running, and throwing the ball?
I think he's got the talent, which he would be the first to tell you, listen, these guys are going out and plays, but he's really good, guys. I don't know how good of a head coach Lane Kiffin is. I've always thought he's a brilliant offensive coordinator. Steve Sarkisian is really good. He's done a couple things the last 3 weeks that have blown my mind. He did something at Auburn where they fake a they got Mechie and Devontae Smith lined up outside. They fake a wide receiver screen to Mechie with Devontae Smith going to block it, and then they run a post off of it, a quick slant off of it, and it was amazing. And then against Florida, they split Najee Harris, the running back, out wide. He does a hitch into a post. Like, obviously, you have to have the offensive line to block that long to fake a hitch and then run a post with a running back, but he's just getting his guys wide open, and he's really good. In terms of has he changed, I think without knowing his, you know, I don't know his personal battles, but I think with anybody that has battled substance abuse or anything in their life, I think they will tell you it's a daily battle. I don't think there's many issues in Tuscaloosa. I think his name came up for the Auburn job before he decided to not interview for that. I think he'll have some more opportunity. There's a contingency of Alabama fans that wouldn't mind him being named coach and waiting in Tuscaloosa. So he's just a really gifted offensive coordinator, and I think he's made all the difference this year for why Mac Jones's numbers are the way they are.
What about Pete Golding on the other side of the ball? Because I think Matt and I, you know, we've covered Clark Lee, who's going to Vanderbilt now, and he was incredibly well regarded up here as sort of like really punching above his weight and making the most of the talent on hand. And I get the sense that Alabama fans maybe don't hold Golding in similar esteem.
You've been reading my Twitter mentions, yes. Haven't you?
Like, how do you sort of see him as a coordinator? I mean, he is sort of, I think when he got to Alabama, he was sort of seen as really a rising star in the industry.
Right.
After being there, one, you have to, it's hard to be at Alabama for more than 1 year for a lot of people. He has, so I think, you know, kudos to him for being cut the right way to handle that. But like, what is your perception of him as a coach and sort of maximizing what Alabama actually has to work with?
I think there's a disconnect somewhere. I mean, obviously Nick Saban sees him, and as you mentioned, Nick Saban saw him as a rising star. I think the way it's been explained to me is if you put Pete Golding, and Nick Saban does this with everybody he sort of brings into interview, he'll put them on the blackboard, right? The dry erase board, and he'll diagram this, and then he starts firing them. Okay, what if I do this? How do you counter that? And Pete was unbelievable. But somewhere along the way, there's a disconnect between that knowledge and communicating it to his players. I'm not going to blame him for Dylan Moses. And Dylan Moses is a great kid, and he's overcome the knee injuries. I don't know what the SEC coaches were watching this year. Dylan Moses is not a first-team All-SEC player. He's just not. Christian Harris far outplayed him. In fact, I would not have had Dylan Moses on any SEC team, All-SEC team. He's just not been that player this year. Part of it could be the knee and him just not trusting it yet, but it's not there. And that's going to be – I mean, Pete's got to wear some of that, I think, because he's the defensive coordinator. I think you're talking about two of the worst defensive performances Alabama's ever had, came in one season, Ole Miss this year, and then what Florida just did to Alabama. Now, part of that's just the way the game's played now, and people have great quarterbacks, and they've grown up playing 7-on-7, and there are more people playing wide receiver now than ever before. You know, some of those guys would be playing defensive backs now, but now you can get five wide receivers on the field at the same time, so people are recruiting more wide receivers. It's just the way the game has shifted to go offensive. That's part of it, but he's going to have to wear some of it, and at this point, I would be surprised if he's back in Tuscaloosa next year.
Wow. You heard it here first on the Shamrock, people. That'll be our tease for our producer, John Hayes.
Pete put him on the Notre Dame defensive coordinator.
Don't do that. Yeah, there we go, yeah.
Nick Saban will bring him back just to flaunt it in my face.
Notre Dame, Michigan, Northwestern, Purdue, and Alabama, all DC openings. Got it. On the subject of coaches and Notre Dame coaches, while we're talking about them, David Ballou was at Notre Dame 3 years ago as assistant strength coach and has succeeded Coach Scott Cochran, who is Nick Saban's kind of mascot, if you will, the last 13 years down there. I know you can only tell so much in season, but what has the reception been for him down there? Obviously, they don't look any different on the field, that's for sure, but what has he brought to the table? Because that's, you know, people look at those USA Today salary databases and they say, why is this strength coach making this? And, you know, anyone who says that doesn't know college football.
Right.
The strength coach is the second most important person in the entire building. And for Nick Saban to give that job to a guy who was an assistant just 3 years ago, I think speaks very highly of him. What are your takeaways of him so far?
Well, you're exactly right. The strength coach talks to these guys maybe more than anybody in the program. I mean, more than your position coach, more than your head coach. You're probably talking to your strength coach more. So Scott Cochran had sort of developed his role into a strength coach, but he was also the good cop to Nick Saban's bad cop a lot of times. And so they lost that. But fair or unfair, Scott Cochran had developed a stigma amongst the fan base that they were having a lot of soft tissue injuries in the season. A lot of guys tearing knees, a lot of guys losing shoulders, knees, that just happened in season. And fair or unfair, the perception was that it was something in the strength and conditioning program. And so when Scott Cochran sort of forced Nick Saban's hand about wanting to be an on-the-field coach, Nick Saban made the decision. He went and went with – they just went with more metrics. They were embracing the technology of it. Now, Alabama has long done this with the GPS, with the catapult system. But what Ray and Ballou do is they're not really concerned about how much you're benching in season, but they're measuring the power in a lift. Not so much the weight on the bar, but how much power you're creating throughout that movement. And knock on wood, if you're an Alabama fan, outside of Landon Dickerson and Jalen Waddle, they've been pretty good on the injury front this year. And, you know, some people are going to blame that on Scott Cochran and attribute it to the new strength and conditioning coaches. I just know that Alabama had planned a sports and science building part of their football before they made this hire. And when they made these hires, the way that these guys embrace all this technology that they use, which is way above my head, but the way that they incorporate all of that just fit in perfectly with the what Alabama had already had planned, and the players seemingly love them.
I wanted to ask you sort of about the infrastructure of the program, because I think that's been a sort of a talking point for a lot of people who followed Notre Dame. And I mean it less so in terms of like the army of analysts and senior analysts and super senior analysts, and more in terms of like the nutrition spaces, the recovery spaces, you know, how much Alabama actually has to work with in terms of square footage up here. Because I think that's something Notre Dame has struggled with and is trying to build out. And they get – Notre Dame is definitely not a, hey, whatever you need,
right,
you can have it. How, like, sort of a, from a I guess give us a nutshell sort of description of like the facilities of Alabama in terms of the square foot, not, you know, the square footage and just how much they actually have to work with in terms of program building.
Well, I'll tell you a story. You know, you said that Notre Dame right now is just not in a position where you need it, we'll build it, no problems. Nick Saban got to Alabama and the weight room was less than 10 years old. And there's, I mean, everyone has their procedures, but there's a compensation committee and a board of trustees where you have to get everything stamped off on before you move ahead on it. And a lot of times it's a rubber stamp. We understand that. They had moved the cranes and there were dirt diggers out there before they'd even had the board of trustees meeting for a new weight room. So if Nick Saban wants it, he gets it. And I'll give Alabama credit for this. They've been, you know, partly responsible for the rise in coaches and assistant coaches' salaries that we've seen, as you mentioned, the analysts that they have. But they do reinvest that for areas for the players. That they constantly redo the recruiting rooms and the players' lounges. They got a new locker room inside Bryant-Denny this year. They got a nutrition area built onto there. So, you know, before Nick Saban got there, it was one building. Now you're talking about they've connected two buildings as they come together. They've added on to that second building. They've added and they've built two more buildings. So now they've really got four buildings where there was really only one and a half. So they've invested a lot in that. And Nick Saban wants it. He gets it. It's funny. It's their indoor facility before Nick Saban got there was actually the indoor tennis facility. And when Nick Saban got there, they didn't have an indoor tennis facility anymore because Nick Saban took it for football.
Yeah, I think Brian Kelly had the indoor football facility was also lacrosse and track until this year. So.
There are players, who fairly recent graduates of Notre Dame, who told me they couldn't go there to work out on their own if they wanted to because there was another team in there.
And that's unbelievable.
They would go to Group of Five programs and have more access that way. Aaron, from Alabama, I believe you went to Alabama. You've covered them for a long time. What's the official year count of you being around that program?
Yeah, I did go to undergraduate there. My older brother went to Auburn, but all my wife's family went to Alabama. I've been around that program, you know, covering it since 2008.
Oh, so right when they got good. So they should build a statue of you. Is this, if they do what we think they're going to do, I mean, if they do what Vegas says they're going to do, right? Beat Notre Dame by 19 and then beat Clemson by, you know, or whatever the projections are in that line, would you say this is the best team in the Nick Saban era?
Man, it would have to be up there just based on navigating that, everything that they've been through. And not Alabama, but everything everybody's been through. The constant not knowing if your opponent's going to be available, not knowing if your quarterback, your offensive line's going to be available, sort of having a plan, letting the players – you know, Nick Saban's taking a big risk. He's letting the players go home. They're not in Tuscaloosa. He let them go for 3 days to go home for Christmas. And there's a big risk in that. That you know, contact tracing and all that might prove that to be an ill-fated decision. But to get through all of that, to have the offense after Tua Tagovailoa that they've had and an all SEC schedule, they play, you know, outside of Alabama, there are 13 other SEC programs. Alabama played 11 of them and beat them. And the only two they didn't play was the worst team in the league, which is Vanderbilt, and South Carolina, which was dismal as well. So they've gotten the best that the SEC has to offer, and to get through that unbeaten, it would have to be up there. And if we're having this conversation sort of kind of projecting it out, that means they beat Notre Dame, and that means they beat their bugaboo Clemson. It would have to be the best team they've had.
Yeah, I was just curious, like, how Alabama sees the rest of college football now. Because I think that, you know, back the last time Notre Dame played, they were sort of without peer, aside from Cam Newton as an individual. Now, you know, Ohio State has elevated.
Yeah.
Clemson has elevated the most. Like, now it feels like Alabama and, whereas the last time Notre Dame played, Alabama was sort of on its own. Like, does Alabama sort of see it that way?
I think so. I mean, you can't – I mean, especially Clemson. And Ohio State beat Alabama the last time those two teams played in the 2014 playoff semifinal. I think Clemson – and the reason I think Clemson is – at least they earn my respect, and take that for whatever it is. But Brent Venables is a mastermind. Brent Venables – I think Alabama can score on any team in the country. I still have my doubts about how much they could score against Sprint Venables, because people forget in that 2018 national championship game in which Clemson just demolished Alabama. Alabama had a lot of yards. Alabama moved the lot up until they got into the 20. And when they got to the 20, Brent Venables said no. And that defensive line said no. The difference this year is Alabama's offensive line's better and they can run the football. I'm curious to see that matchup if we get there. But certainly Clemson, the way they recruit, what they've accomplished, and Ohio State, what they're doing year in and year out, I think those are their two biggest peers, certainly.
I was going to say earlier when you mentioned Saban sending the guys home for Christmas, someone affiliated with Notre Dame, who Pete and I are on a text chain with, sent us the tweet of that news followed by a GIF of Lloyd Christmas saying, "So you're telling me there's a chance?" And I think that's what Notre Dame fans are probably hanging on to right now. But in that same vein, I don't say this as a criticism. I don't say this, you know, I'm just saying it as it is. I mean, I've never seen or felt a fan base as down right now that's in the playoff and actually is technically has a chance to win a national championship as Notre Dame is right now. I think we all saw that SportsCenter video of the mother freaking out when she sees her team playing Alabama. What's the pulse on Tide Nation? I mean, are they just like, we did this 8 years ago, we're going to do it again. Let's just look ahead to Clemson or Ohio State. Are they like, wait, they did beat Clemson once this year. Like, we can't just – like, how are they approaching it?
It's tough to get a – because my read of the Alabama fan base is basically what I see on Twitter, and that's probably not a good way to gauge a fan base because the thing about Alabama fans is they've come – and I say this understanding it's human nature. They've completely lost perspective that I don't really hear that much excitement for SEC championships anymore. I mean, I thought to the 2016 Alabama team, despite them not winning a national championship, that great game they played with Deshaun Watson and Clemson, that was the best Alabama team I've ever seen. And they came up 1 second short against an unbelievable quarterback, generational talent. And then it was just like they didn't appreciate what Alabama had done. And I think that's human nature when you – I mean, they've been on this, guys, since 2008. I mean, they've won – they've been number one in the country – every season, at least some portion of the season, since 2008. It's absurd. And so that you can't help but be a little unappreciative maybe of what a program does. That's sort of where they are. And I think based on 2012, based on what Notre Dame just went through with Clemson, I think there is a feeling that they're not even really that concerned with Notre Dame. I think that's partly the arrogance and part of what is being an Alabama fan right now, probably in one of the greatest eras we've ever seen of any program for a decade or more.
I guess I got to ask, like, how long is this going to go on? Does anybody know?
I think a lot of people want it to end.
Yes, and yes, they do. It's true.
I completely understand it. You know, I was in the press box with one of my with a fellow beat writer, and we were covering. I think it was the final game of the season. So it was the Auburn game. And I looked over at him. I'm like, do you ever just think that we're covering the greatest college football program ever? I mean, do you ever think about all the great players that we've seen? And he goes, yeah, all the time. So we sort of take it for granted. I think it comes down to Nick Saban doesn't have anything else, guys. He's not going to run his Mercedes dealership. I think the best thing is if he got some television work, but even then, is he going to be a guy who's gone from being a CEO, micromanager, everything in his day laid out to the second? Is he going to be that guy to being a guy doing a 5-minute hit on SportsCenter and hanging around TV sets? Is that going to fulfill him? I think as long as his health holds out, I don't see him doing anything else because I just don't think he has anything else to do.
Yeah, it's. I go back and forth with this, whether this is good or bad for the game. I generally think good because I don't think Clemson gets to the level they're at right now without having that Alabama goal. And eventually, probably not anytime soon from the looks of it, but someone else will get to that level and either replace one of those two teams whenever one of those two coaches leaves. I just think a rising tide leads right – but rising tide lifts all ships. Sorry, as I get that analogy wrong. And I think it, no pun intended, but it could be I'm trying to enjoy it. I mean, I get why people are frustrated with it. I get the over-regionalization of the sport, but you know, if Alabama could do it, then obviously Clemson could do it. If Clemson could do it, I think someone along the line can come and do it as well.
And I think part of what fans don't enjoy about Alabama is that Nick Saban doesn't look like he's enjoying it. That you've just like that you can run off a season winning national championship and the next day complain about missing time recruiting. I think that's why, to a certain extent, although I think it's starting to bite him in the rear end now, I think people have up maybe till a year ago enjoyed Dabo.
Yeah, I think that's turned too.
But I think Dabo's played the little old Clemson card a little too much, and so yeah. That's starting to – and he's probably had a little too much – like, we love – here's the thing about Americans. We love success, but we can't stand sustained success. I mean, when there's a team in the NBA that runs off a few titles, you want to see them lose. And that's sort of what it is at Alabama. It's the they win too much. Nick Saban doesn't look like he's having fun. Nick Saban is always talking down to people. And the fact that we like success and we like success stories, but man, we don't like it when success lasts too long.
I try to think of it as like no one looks back and says, "Oh, I wish Magic and Larry Bird played less."
Right.
You know what I mean? Maybe in the moment they were like right. that, but you look back at that as such a great era in the game, and I think eventually we'll do the same with Clemson and Alabama here.
I did, you know, before we wrap up, I did want to ask you, you had mentioned recruiting, and I think that's sort of a hot button topic for Notre Dame. I get a ton of questions about, like, essentially, how does Notre Dame get closer to Alabama? and we're going to do sort of a talent discrepancy story next week. Spoiler alert, Alabama has signed 21 five-star prospects over the last four cycles, and Notre Dame has signed one. What's the secret?
It's the great dichotomy of Nick Saban, a man that looks so surly to be such a taskmaster, but who can flip a switch. And I've seen it happen because he did it when he first got to Alabama with me. He can be one charming man. I mean, it's – I don't know if he's playing a part. One part of his life, one part of his enacting job, whether that be the tyrant that we see or whether that be the unbelievable salesman that we see. But he really does pitch – and I mentioned how Alabama reinvests its money. I mean, they brought in Kobe Bryant before he passed to speak to the team. They were going to have him in person this year, but because of COVID, they had Michael Jordan on a Zoom. He invests in areas other than football, which I think parents really like. He set up the network with boosters that, hey, what are you interested in outside of sports? Do you want to go be a businessman? Well, here's someone in your area that's an Alabama alumnus that we can set you up with after you graduate, and they can help sort of be a mentor for you. They've got that covered. But we all know the deal. But above any of that is there a pipeline to the NFL. They put a lot of guys. They got the most guys in the NFL on active rosters right now. They put two wide receivers in the first round last year. They put an offensive tackle in last year. They just put guys in the NFL, and that's where these majority of these young men see themselves. And so – he got it started, and he kept it rolling, and success has bred success.
I guess we'll end it there. You mentioned Brent Venables looking ahead. I agree with you that he's the best defense coordinator in the country. I think Auburn was right to kind of pursue him because that's one guy who could beat Nick Saban. But even the best DCs, I mean, in this era, you look at last year's title game, Clemson held Joe Burrow to his lowest completion percentage of the season, sacked him five times, built a 10-point lead. Still gave up 42 points and lost by 17. I don't know if Alabama is at that level of last year's LSU, but I still think the best offense this year beats the best defense. And I have a hard time seeing. I mean, after seeing Trevor last week, I mean, I would never completely write off Clemson as long as that guy's throwing it. But I just have a hard time seeing anyone coming close to Alabama this year.
I'm with you. There used to be an old adage that offense sold tickets and defense won championships. Offense wins championships now.
Yeah, and Saban said it himself. I remember reading that story. It was maybe early October where Saban was like, "I don't like this, but
it is what it is."
Reality, folks.
Poor guy.
Like, I have to suffer through this, so you're going to suffer through it with me. Offense wins championships. There, I said it.
That's right.
I think that sort of goes back to Notre Dame, though. It's like, I think Notre Dame was like, "All right, we're a defense wins championship," because that's what Alabama did in 2012, and we spent 8 years trying to get there.
Oops.
And, wait a minute. It's a difficult reality. But that's the world Notre Dame is choosing to live in right now in the college football playoff.
the more things have changed, the more they stay the same. The same two coaches at those two programs. The three of us were all covering that game for three different outlets, and now we're all working together under the Athletic umbrella, recording a podcast talking about how we may see a repeat of that game all over again. Hopefully, for everyone's sake, it's not. I want it to be a good game. I want everything to be a good game, but we shall see.
Yeah, I'm with you. I hope it's a close game.
All right, Aaron. Thanks for joining us here on the Shamrock. A little Alabama insight heading towards the college football playoff on January 1.
Thanks for having me.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
That was Aaron Suttles, Alabama beat reporter for The Athletic. Some really good insight in sort of what makes Alabama Alabama. I don't know if I wasn't expecting to feel any differently about the game going into the interview. I didn't feel any differently about the game coming out of it, I guess, entirely. Although maybe I thought that if you're Notre Dame, you're looking at that and saying, like, all right, they haven't played a team that does a lot of two tight end, three tight end type stuff. That might be the one thing that stood out to me, is like, all right, maybe there's a sliver here that Tommy Reese can sort of pry open and then maybe have some success, because certainly Alabama, it seems like if you have a good game plan, you can get them at least a little bit.
Right. I mean, it sounds like Notre Dame is an SEC team from 2012, which was a dime a dozen back then, and right now is not. You know, Alabama has not played a team like that before that could run the ball strong on the offensive line and sound in all three phases of the game. What's interesting, I mean, someone who, you know, follows that program, like anyone who's a fan of college football, but not, you know, day to day. I knew there was a little bit of fan angst with Pete Golding. I didn't know I'm not trying to make a headline here out of what Aaron said, but that's interesting, right? We're talking about a team that could be one of the greatest ever. And it's like, oh yeah, their DC might not be back next year. I mean, is he coaching for his job? I don't know. I don't want to take it that far, but that's interesting. Like, it's scary in some ways. Like, all right, they could still get better as a program. And in other ways, it's like, oh, yeah, maybe there's some internal dysfunction there that will rear its ugly head on the biggest stage. I don't know.
Maybe they're just, it's a long play to get Bob Diaco down there. It's something to consider.
Nick Saban has rehabbed worse coaches than Bob Diaco. That's all I'll say.
I don't know. Like we talked about at the beginning of the show, I think it's going to be a great sober assessment of where Notre Dame is as a program. And I mean, you had mentioned sort of, you know, you want to be on these stages to see where you are. Like, I wonder if there's going to be sort of a multiplying effect of like doing Clemson 34-10, Alabama, whatever that final score is. Ultimately, does it sort of prompt Brian Kelly to change anything depending on where it goes?
Well, we've had this conversation, right, about the recruiting, and we asked Aaron about it. And look, there are probably three people in the world who are wired like Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, and Urban Meyer, who like genuinely wake up and love to go into 17-year-olds' living rooms and sell mommy and daddy on why the school is perfect for you. Like, that's not like an acquired skill. Like, certainly you can get better at it, but they just innately have this ability that they like doing that more than they like actually coaching. And coaching becomes a lot easier when you have the best players who do what you say and are capable of doing what you ask them to do. Is Brian Kelly ever going to be that? I mean, I think, you know, we know he has a bigger personality than he often lets on, and he can turn it on with the best of them when needed. And he's brought up that we need to be aiming higher mantra for recruiting as late as this time last year. Does that change when the world returns to normal and they're able to get on the road again, which Notre Dame more than anyone else needs to do because they're going to so many different places and they need to get kids on campus to see what they're going to see and to feel the vibes of Notre Dame and not just look on a map and see what's this place in Northern Indiana. Yeah, they need to do all that. One of the fascinating things I remember, you know, from discussions over the years, I didn't get a chance to ask Aaron this, was, you know, Nick Saban was so damn good there so early on that he was able to form basically a plain dealing program for boosters to the staff. Whereas, hey, Pete Golding, you need to get to Alaska tomorrow. Call up this guy. He'll have a plane on the runway for you in 20 minutes. We spent a lot of time last year on this podcast talking about how Notre Dame assistants still don't fly private, which is like, we forgot about it because there are a bit bigger fish to fry in this world in the middle of the season. But like going back in time or moving forward in time in a post-vaccination world, like Notre Dame, you don't have a chance if you're not like doing this for your guys. Like Wake Forest does this, you know, like this is run-of-the-mill stuff. And Notre Dame is not operating that way. I think the people who are in the recruiting department, we both know probably all of them really well. They're great. There's like four of them. Nick Saban probably has 14 of those guys. Like, it's just not, it's not an apples-apples comparison. And I think Notre Dame, while they're not a football factory, this isn't a school like Alabama that can just say, hey, Father Jenkins, we want this, this, and this. Okay, good. It's not like that. But they got a lot of money. That staff is very well compensated. They have resources to invest in their personnel. And I, you know, we could get into the specifics another time during the offseason, but like that's something they need to do. I mean, just day-to-day even when they're evaluating prospects, they rarely get together the way most full staffs do. There's very little communication on that staff when it comes to recruiting. And I've heard this from people who work there now, who have worked there in the past. You know, if the offensive line coach doesn't like this, and this is a hypothetical, but you know, if the line coach on the offense doesn't like this guy, there's not the defensive line coach there saying, you know what, maybe I could take him here. You see that in other programs. Notre Dame doesn't really have any of that. And that's, you know, internally, taking money and facilities and all the fun stuff out of the equation, that's where they need to get better.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about comparing yourself to Alabama and like doing an internal audit, I don't think we think about it in those terms necessarily. I know they did it with Clemson lately, and I wrote about that after the 2018 Cotton
Bowl. But even the Clemson guys came away from that and were like, wait, how'd they get to the playoff with this? You know what I mean? Like, it's like old and like dirty compared at least to like what Clemson and Alabama have. I mean, it's, to me, that's like, you can win a national championship at Notre Dame. You're in the playoff 2 out of 3 years, and we have all these shortcomings to point out about you. And I know it's easier said than done, but I will never accept the, well, we reached our ceiling, we just can't do it. I'll never accept that line of thinking from that place.
All right. Way to go, Fortuna. I like this positive, upbeat way to wrap up.
Is that positive? Okay. Yeah, I thought it was a little positive message board ranty.
No. People loved it. People loved to hear it.
Awesome.
We'll have plenty more of the Shamrock and content in the Athletic next week after Christmas. I'm not going to tease our special guest since we got burned on that last time, but hopefully we'll have sort of a good X's and O's guest join the podcast next week to talk a little bit more about Alabama and Notre Dame, as he's familiar with both of them.
Any Christmas plans?
Just sitting around the fireplace, watching my kids tear through stuff, and that figuring out how to make a roast, because usually that was my big revelation of Thanksgiving, is like, man, I am so lazy. I don't do anything, and all this food is just made. Now, when you have to make it yourself, it's just a lot more complicated.
I wanted to do a repeat of Thanksgiving. I was like, oh, I grilled a turkey. It turned out fine. The house didn't burn down. And I offered to do that again, and it was no. So I guess it wasn't that good. So we'll just be grilling steaks, the three of us, and watching TV, and you know, staying safe.
That's about what's going to happen here. And then, yeah, we'll fire back the podcast back up next week. At least one, probably two episodes. Our Taskmaster producer, John Hayes, will get us to knock out a couple. Previewing Notre Dame, Alabama. It's, I don't know. There's so much. I find this strange. I don't know if you feel the same way. Like, there's a ton of interesting stuff about this game, but very little of it has to do with the actual game. It's all the extra stuff that is interesting to me. Like, what Notre Dame's offensive approaches on 1st and 10 near midfield is not that interesting to me, whereas like measuring yourself against Alabama, I find fascinating.
Well, what do you think they're like in the Goog right now as far as
Well, I can tell
tense,
you.
Tense.
I went for a really nice long run today that took me by the Goog around 8:30 a.m. and the lot was packed. So I know they were all working on December 23rd. I would think like tense, but, you know, it's hard to judge because, I mean, you're sitting there talking to Brian Kelly the day before the ACC championship game. He's like, boom, let's play now. We're ready to go on Friday. And then the way the game starts out, they're a little all over the place offensively, and then they get blown off the field defensively. Like, I don't know what Notre Dame's approach is going to be. I mean, the players are still on campus, practicing, working out. Maybe we should ask them what their Christmas plans were when we talked to them on Monday. But it's just like, I don't know, it's a weird dynamic here. So I don't know how they're going to be wired next week.
You know, it's funny. We talk about how defense looked and how good Clemson looked against them. They held, along with the Boston College game, they held Clemson to their lowest point total of the season.
Yeah. Which was 1 point more than they held them to in regulation in the first
meeting. There were a lot of angry tweeters Sunday morning when I was tweeting quotes from Clark Lee's. They're still coming at us for tweeting Clark Lee's press conference quotes from that day. Guys, this is college football. Saban does it every year. Dabo does it every year. Like, no. Yeah, Brian Kelly's not going to tell Clark Lee, hey, we don't need you. Thanks. No. And by the way, I think Clark Lee, as a future SEC head coach, might want to coach in this game, you know, to see what he's going up against for the rest of his life.
He is one of three SEC head coaches since the Nick Saban era began with a not losing record against Nick Saban. The other ones are Brian Harsin and Shane.
Exactly.
So if you've never
played. And this one doesn't count because he's not a head coach.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that will be one of the interesting things next week, and we'll touch on that in future podcasts, is we do have access to Tommy Reese in sort of a football-centric interview setting, and Clark Lee, while he joined our podcast in the summer, the first time he will have talked publicly in quite a while. So there will be interesting things to cover next week leading up to the game, and certainly a lot after. During the game, that will be interesting as well, but maybe hold a little bit less weight.
Two coordinators speaking. This is a great conjunction happening twice in a week. Two Notre Dame coordinators making public appearances and speaking to people like me and you on the record. That's wasn't done by choice. I know that as the bold people, but thank you nonetheless.
God bless the college football playoff that way. So, all right. Well, until then, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you, Matt. To our listeners, you guys have been great. It's been a fun year to cover, a fun year to podcast about, and we'll be back next week. So until then, again, Merry Christmas. Thanks for being with us here on the Shamrock.